I'm Evan Onimus.
And I'm Michael Davis.
You like video games?
Of course I like video games. Who doesn't like video games?
Then you're in the right place. Welcome to eHounds, your one-stop shop for everything video game related here on 91.3 WHJE.
The voice of the Greyhounds.
All right, welcome, guys. So we're going to start off, actually, with Michael talking about Assassin's Creed Syndicate.
So, yeah, Assassin's Creed Syndicate just came out, and it's great. I think it's much better than Unity, and I even enjoyed Unity. A lot of people didn't, but, you know, I did. And even then, I still think Syndicate is even better. It's just, it's so much fun. I'm not too far into the story yet, but it's already, the story is already great. Basically, what it is you play as two assassins in this one instead of just one, which is already unique. And it's the story of the twins Jacob Fry and Evie Fry. And you, basically the two of them, you're already established assassins, which is also a little bit different from the other games as well. Because in the other games, you know, you're usually like, hey, I don't know the assassins exist. And then all of a sudden you get put into the war and stuff like that. Whereas in this one, they're just like, hey, you're assassins. And you're like, cool, all right. And so you're just kind of running around, doing your things. The first two missions are kind of like the intro missions and stuff like that. And then your two characters are told that they need to report to the, like, assassin's headquarters for more missions. But instead, the two assassins are like, no, we're going to go to London and kill the Grand Master Templar. And so they just go to London and do their thing. So far, again, I'm not far enough into it yet for the assassins to figure that out. I assume, like, they will in the story.
I feel like you just gave away a huge plot spoiler without even trying.
I wouldn't say, because all of the stuff that I just said happens within, like, the first 15 minutes of play.
Okay, okay, I wasn't sure. I just wanted to make sure.
Like, that's, the first 15 minutes. So, sorry if I ruined the first 15 minutes for you. But yeah, and just, so everything about it is cool. Again, I love the two-spy dynamic. Because in most games, you know, you've been playing as the one character. Whereas in this one, you have Jacob Fry, who's more of your, just kind of run in head first. You know, he's the bull. He's going to just fight everyone and do whatever he wants. And then you have Evie, who's kind of the more tactical, you know, stay in the shadows and stay hooded and all that stuff. So she's doing that. And the two have their own different storylines, too, which is awesome. Like Jacob, he's all about recruiting a gang, basically. He's like, that's the best way to fight against this Templar, is to recruit these gangs to fight his gangs, and we're just gonna, you know, do battle. Whereas Evie is more like, no, we're gonna, you know, secure these different areas, we're gonna learn, we're gonna go out and figure out what's actually happening in the city and stuff like that. So the two just, they have their unique story, and everything is just great about it. Also, within, like, the first 20 minutes, you're fighting on top of a train, which was probably the thing I was most excited about in this game. It's awesome, because you're just standing on this train, jumping from cart to cart as people are chasing you across the train, and it's amazing.
That just, like, brought me back to the days of Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
That's, I don't know why, that made me think of, like, because you can rock when, like, just robbing a train.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, that's how you feel. You're just, like, running on this train with these guys chasing you and shooting at you, and you just, like, don't care, and it's great. Yeah, no, I even went to Best Buy yesterday, and I bought the cosplay Hidden Blade that they have, because I was loving the game so much.
It took them, wait, so how long has that cosplay Hidden Blade been? Because I've always seen, like, a bunch of, I guess, wait, is this, like, a Ubisoft brand thing?
Yeah.
How long did it take them to make this? And by make this, I mean, so you've got Assassin's Creed 1, 2, then Brotherhood, Revelations 3, 4...
Well, Black Flag, technically.
Well, 4, Black Flag.
Yeah.
It's like 4, colon, okay, yeah. So 4. Then it was Unity after
Unity,
4?
Unity, yeah.
So 8 years to release Hidden Blade?
Well, no, this is the Hidden Blade specific to Syndicate. Yeah, they've had Hidden Blades, cosplay Hidden Blades, that is, forever. I don't know.
I've never seen them, not Ubisoft really? Brand ones.
Oh, really? They've had those for a while. I know they had one for Unity, at least. But those are the cosplay ones. I don't think there's a Unity brand, like, actual bladed one, which I want to get one of those, too, because they're cool.
That reminds me, so I remember when, this was back when Deus Ex Human Revolutions was about to come out, And this was a sweepstakes thing. I think they did it with like they did it through GameStop, but you could get like the robotic arm, but it would be on like a mount. But it wasn't functional, but it just like looked awesome.
I mean, that's the point of like all the things that you can buy for video games is they just look really cool. Most of the time, things aren't functioning. Like, I know for Blizzard, I have just a bunch of like different little knickknacks that I put on my desk, and it's like they don't really do anything. They just sit there and look cool, and I love it.
Well, I think it's really interesting because I feel like gaming is the hobby or activity that knickknacks are aimed the most at.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you even have those services now, like Loot Crate, and there's one that what it does, I forget what it's called. I think it's called, like, IndieBox, but like you have all these services that do that type of stuff now. And I mean, you know, it used to be just you have to find it and now it comes to you.
Yeah, no. But gaming is really it's a big knickknack thing because what do you do when you're gaming? Where are you sitting? You're sitting at your desk usually if you're a PC gamer. And even if you're a console gamer, you're sitting right next to your desk or around it.
It's generally.
Or, yeah.
It can be anywhere.
Exactly. But you're in an area that you can have your knickknacks with you, and you can just look at them while you're playing video games. And so I think that's why there is the loot crates and all that stuff, because, you know, it's simple. It's not like football where if you want to go out and enjoy it, you have to leave your house. And if you're leaving your house, then you can't see your knickknacks. And you know, yeah, like you laugh, but like that's the reason gaming, I think. Not only do video games sell really well, but I think the knickknacks and the stuff behind them sell just as well because, you know, for gamers, it's easy for us to get those things and then just kind of look at them as we're doing the things we love to do.
That was that to me, for some reason, sounded very profoundly deep.
I've thought a lot about this because I spend a lot of time buying these knickknacks.
You've been thinking of an argument to justify every single purchase.
Absolutely. My family makes fun of me endlessly for buying the stupid things that you just put on the mantle and they collect dust. They make fun of me all the time for it, but I will defend them till my dying breath, much like Valiant Hearts. Anyway.
I never said Valiant Hearts was bad. I just said...
Look, I'm still bitter. Anyway.
It's a good game. I would recommend it to people. I would give it... if I were to give it a rating, I'd probably give it like... I don't know. I would definitely... I wouldn't give it anything lower than like an 8.7.
Good.
But like... But I mean, like, I think the game has its flaws. I just kind of wish there was more... I think... I just wish there'd be more Valiant Hearts. Because the thing is they named it Valiant Hearts the Great War, so they totally set themselves up for more Valiant Hearts.
Absolutely, and I hope they make more too. Anyway, we talked about that last show.
That was the last time.
That was a lot of last show.
But yes, it was.
But yeah, no, so I will defend the knickknacks as well forever. Like I even have this big cardboard orc sitting next to my table from World of Warcraft, and I love it.
So with consoles, it's more you have special editions, and it's a lot more about like the boxes. Because you know the one thing, if I could, so since you know currently I still live with my parents, like I can't set up stuff. I don't know your parents. Like my parents don't let me do knickknacks.
Really?
I basically just
live in like there's a small space in our family room that's basically just my space.
I don't have that. So, really? So that's why that's definitely one reason. But so like I have special editions, but they're all like in the closet.
Oh, well, you could do what I've done in the past. My closet's gross right now. But in the past, I have actually had like different like stuffed knickknack things and just other like posters and stuff that I've put in my closet. And it's kind of been almost shrine-ish. In there, almost a little bit creepy, but it's still just cool. You open up your closet and it's like, hey, there's a bunch of gaming stuff in here.
See, I have like 8 posters and I would love to like just put them in my room or something. But thing is I also would want to get them framed because like some of them are really nice and like some of them were presents and gifts.
Yeah.
And some of them were, I remember I actually got one of the promotion, like what, you know, if you've ever been to GameStop, I got one of their promotion banners that they put like behind the windows.
That's awesome.
So yeah, that's really cool.
Well, continue.
Well, and so what was for Halo Reach? I should have mentioned that. I mean, personally, I think Reach was the last good Halo game.
Yeah, again, I haven't played any of them
yet. You have? Oh, yeah. You got the Master Chief? We talked about that.
Yeah, yes, I have the Master Chief Collection. I'm going to play it at some point. I have to beat Syndicate first, And then after that, I'll probably go back to WoW for a little bit, at least until... I want to focus on WoW until Legion comes out, and then, you know, I'll play through Legion. And then after, like, once I get to the max level, get geared up and stuff like that, and while I'm waiting on, like, the next patch or something like that, that's when I'll start focusing on other games.
Okay, something I want to note. So, you said you have multiple level 100s, so if you ever get on one of your level 100s, like, what do you do?
Anything. Anything I want. Like, if I... A lot of it is just, since I'm not a hardcore player anymore, I used to be when I was in middle school and then, you know, in the beginning of high school, but as high school's gone on, I've gotten busier with theater, film, television, radio, all the stuff that I do, so I've become more of a casual player. I know, terrifying, right?
Well, this isn't Dark Souls, you're good.
I've become more of a casual WoW player. But I like to experience the content still. I want to experience everything. So as a casual player, there's always something to do to progress my character. Since I'm not like this heroic hardcore raider, or mythic, I guess it is now, I'm always somewhat undergeared, which I actually kind of like. Because every time I log on, there's something for me to do. I could run a Looking for Raid Finder. I could run just the daily quests in, right now, Hellfire Peninsula. And just all that stuff. So there's always something for me to do, at least. So if you're a casual player, it's great. If you're a hardcore player, it's still great. You're just doing the hardcore things, like raiding 7 nights a week.
This is a question for you, so I don't know, because I don't know how much WoW does this, but if WoW could make it so you could basically get to the max level non-violently, and so what I mean by that is the Elder Scrolls Online, you know, it has a huge amount of stuff to do, like crafting, which I think what would be interesting is if they focused on that as more like you can level up through just crafting, which you kind of can. But I mean, like, solely, like, if you just wanted to be a blacksmith, you could solely get to the max level via just blacksmithing. But also, I think it would do more to, like, boost an economy, which I know that's, like, a really complicated thing in MMOs, but I think that'd be really interesting to see. But so I was wondering, like, could, like, so how do the subset of skills?
The professions in WoW you do get experience from. I don't know if you could do that all the way up to max level.
Well, there was guy who got when Mists of Pandaria came out. He went from level 1 to 90 by, like, picking herbs in the starting zone.
I was going to say, I know you get experience from it, but I don't know how much. I know it's usually very little, so to level up non-violently would be really difficult. Because, I mean, also there are non-violent quests, so I guess if you consider that non-violent as well, you could do those. Like, there's the, hey, bring this wheel of cheese to this guy so he doesn't starve. Like, there are those quests where you don't have to kill any mobs. But, yeah, to level up in WoW all the way to max level non-violently would be really difficult.
Well, because I think you...
Maybe not so much difficult, just time-consuming.
Sorry, I had to swallow some mucus there, but so
it's kind of gross. I feel like you didn't need to say that.
Okay, we'll edit this out in post.
No, I think you should leave it in there. Viewers? No one's viewing this. This is radio. Listeners need to know.
Well, you can hypothetically view it if you were to get a sound visualizer, but we're getting off topic. So anyways, because what captivated me about the Elder Scrolls Online was, you know, how much you could craft. And so for me, I would have loved to have just done nothing but make swords. And just, like, that's how I would hit the max level. But the thing is, like, no MMO really does that. Like, you have to do some sort of fighting. You have to be in it. Like, what it is, it's, and this kind of has to do more with the Elder Scrolls Online, with how it starts out, is it's like, you are the chosen one as you see 5 other people around you. It's like, so when they do that, then it's like, well, everyone has to be an adventurer, so...
That's a big issue with just MMOs in general. Like, with World of Warcraft, they're coming out with, in the new expansion, these like, legendary epic weapons that, like, you as the hero get. And these are weapons that you've seen other characters wield. Like, there's the Ashbringer, which has been wielded by the character Tyrion Fordring in the expansion Wrath of the Lich King. And for those who don't play WoW or don't know who that character is, he's the guy who basically killed the big bad guy in that expansion. Tyrion Fordring is the guy who killed the Lich King in that expansion. And as a paladin, you get to use his sword. Now, that means you're going to see, like, 80, 90, 100, 8 billion paladins running around with this supposedly only one super unique sword.
Well, that's what, yeah. I think it's going to be, it's like a syndrome said, when everyone's super, no one is.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's one reason why I think MMO should change. But I also think so because then it drives the economy. Because what you basically are going to do is you're going to split it up into people who make money from adventuring and people who make money from selling. And the real only difference is what happens at the end game. Because if you were to make it so that, you know, you adventure, well, you can still get really neat gear, but I think it'd also be really cool. And part of it is when you get millions of players, it's really hard to say, all right, these people are the only people that get to do stuff. Which I think that'd be a really risky move, but I would actually kind of like to see that, even if you know, I would never get to see certain expansions.
Well, I was going to say that. I mean, I know for at least WoW, Blizzard has a big push of wanting everyone to experience the story. And if you were just solely a crafter, then you wouldn't experience every little bit of the juicy lore that is in the game. And Blizzard is all about everyone experiencing the story. That's why they did LFR and stuff like that. So that would be a big issue with World of Warcraft, at least, is you wouldn't be able to experience that story.
So, okay, we're going to quickly sidetrack a little here. So we've decided to start introducing packages, and these can range from game reviews to composer reviews. Michael, I believe you're the one.
Less of a review, more of just like, hey, here's just their music and it's cool.
And all sorts of different things. So we're actually going to start off cutting to the review of Telltale Games' The Walking Dead, because this, we're recording this on a Tuesday, but this will actually be going up on the website on air on Halloween.
I mean, it'll also go on the website as well. Check us out at WHJE.com.
But so we'll be right back here on 91.3 WHJE Carmel. Before Telltale Games' The Walking Dead, I never thought of myself much as a story person. But man, I was on the edge of my seat waiting for more and more at each chapter's end. The Walking Dead is a third-person interactive story that focuses on Lee, a man who starts out on his way to jail, but ends up escaping after the infection starts, and he tries to live during the newfound apocalypse. The main story is separated into 5 different episodes, with each episode feeling like a complete game. The game mainly focuses on story and choices, focusing on creating relationships that the player feels invested in, rather than having the player choose between generic teammate number 1 and generic teammate number 2. The game does an excellent job of telling its story through the environment, showing you the history of what life was like before the apocalypse. And each character that you run into, they feel like a person. Everyone has their own wants and needs. The only games that The Walking Dead is really comparable to are Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls. Both focus on story and choices, but not in the same way The Walking Dead does. What Telltale Games did to make their game unique is that they give you a time limit. In most games, whenever a choice comes up, your character just sits there, and you can take as long or as little as you want to make the decision, but not in The Walking Dead. With every dialogue option and even some major decisions that affect the rest of the game, you have a limited amount of time to decide everything from choosing between two people to save to choosing between two sides in an argument. You have to think on your feet. And while in dialogue, you're only limited to 4 options, each dialogue option feels complete and full. And you don't have to think about that whatever you say will be taken the wrong way later. And you want to be careful about what you say too, because every character will remember how you treated them, and subsequently, they will treat you differently in the future. Through my playthrough, at the beginning, I tried to be the equivalent of Switzerland, where it was nice and neutral, but I found out very quickly that that is not a viable option. As you progress through the story, you will have to make friends and enemies. By putting all of this pressure on the player, it can really show you how you just might act in times of crisis. One definite thing I would consider a shortcoming is the fact, though, that you have to make an alliance. It is not easy to make yourself the neutral character, and it is strongly suggested that you take sides. The only other real shortcoming is that the main story is very linear. All of the general events will happen whenever you replay the story. The only real difference will be the dialogue options that you choose. What I found really interesting, however, was that at the end of each episode, you get to see how your choices ranked up against every other player's choice.
All in all, The Walking Dead is really meant for those of you who want to play a more story-driven game, with little focus on combat mechanics and a huge focus on communication. You will find little action outside of conversations, and when there is, it comes in quick time events. If you're ready for a true national crisis simulator, then this is the game for you.
And we're back here at eHounds, your one-stop shop for everything gaming-related here on 91.3 WHJE.
The voice of the Greyhounds.
So as we were talking about World of Warcraft, and so I guess WoW might not be able to do that, but I would definitely love seeing at least one MMO come out where, like, that's what its caveat is.
Where the crafting thing is. We should probably refocus what we're talking about just in case someone forgot during the 5 minutes.
Yes, we were talking about World of Warcraft and systems of play that would be non-violent. Okay, this reminds me of a browser game called... Okay, it's called Fallen London. I remember it as Echo Bazaar. And it's very story-heavy. And basically, they kind of have, like... There's a four-way-to-play system. And, you make a character that's either watchful... I think it's, like, watchful, charismatic, sneaky, or, like, strong. And so, like, those are your only four... Like, those are your four skills, kind of. But you only really major in one of them. Now, I'm going to be honest, the only thing that was really bad about that game is that it had a turn limit type of thing where you had a limited amount of resources, and once resources were out, you couldn't make any moves and you had to wait to get them back. And so it's the type of game that it'll captivate you for like 4 hours and then you're like, oh, wait, I can't do anything. Well, time to play something else. Yeah. And then you never come back to it.
Which is like most free iPhone games or free games on the phone, really.
Okay, honestly,
or just like you play, like they're really fun for 5 minutes, and then it's like, oh, microtransaction time. Well, or else I can't play it anymore.
It's not microtransactions. It's a really fun game. I think.
Well, I wasn't saying microtransactions for that one. I was just saying that's a big issue with free to play phone games.
But what I think is good is so it has a great, well, because it's mostly text based. It has really great writing, really great story.
That's awesome.
But what I think is, see, I feel like what they should do is they should focus a lot more on like date based events. So like if you log in, you have an event, and so like that's how stuff happens. And I think what they should probably, what I think they could do to personally make it really great, and so they could get rid of the you have a certain amount of actions, is they should say, well, you have events, and that's kind of one thing that they'll do. But also, you know, I think if they made it so, okay, well, you need this in order to, like, you need certain amount of bronze, copper pieces in order to do this. Like, I think that would be interesting because, I mean, it's something that you can do. And if they could, and, you know, you basically, it's just putting a lot of random chance and rolls into it.
Yeah.
But so getting back to, like, the non-violent, I guess, with most MMOs, I just think that'd be interesting because, you know, as I said, you'd have people who would adventure. And so, you know, they get stuff based off of loot. And then you'd have people who could craft stuff. And so when I was talking about, well, you have that subset of people who get very, very rare things, I was more talking like, you know, there's maybe only one of this weapon type because it's from a long forgotten race that lived thousands of years ago. So there's only 5 swords left. And if you find one, then that's it. There's just one of them. You have one of the 5. No one else can get it. Or,
yeah, but an issue that you run into there is people get whiny and people get complainy that they can't have those.
Well, what I think you do is I think the only real way to address that is to go to the player base and say, like, this is the caveat of our experience. If, you know, you might not get the cool stuff, but that doesn't
then at that point people just won't play your game. That's a huge issue with MMOs. If the player base doesn't like a decision you made, they have a bunch of other choices of MMOs, so they'll just go play a different one.
I guess...
I'm just saying that's a big issue that you run into. Like, your idea is cool. I think it'd be awesome, and it would definitely make people feel more unique if there were several weapons that was... It's like, there's only one of these. You can only one person in the entire player base out of millions of people can have this thing. And then, like, maybe if they're, you know, they delete their account or something, the sword goes back to the people.
Well, what I would say is, well, another thing I probably would put is I'm the type of person that in an MMO, I kind of like, you know, if you have immense wealth, like, using it. So what I think would be really cool is you could also just, like, put it on display. So you might not want to use it because it might just be rare. It might just be rare. It might not even be good. It's just rare. In which case, I don't feel like someone's going to be too angry because it's just now taking up inventory space. It's a really expensive and it takes up inventory space. But just because you have like a rare item, I don't think that would mean, oh, hey, you know, there's no other types of legendary or mythic.
Well, no,
weapons.
That's not what I'm saying. Oh. Is I'm still saying that everyone would want it. Like, if one person has it, everyone is also going to want it too. And if they can't get it, then they're just going to go cry to the community managers and all that stuff. And just, it would be bad. So that's really, that's the way I see it going down. That's why it doesn't happen. Again, I like the idea. I think it's cool. I honestly wouldn't complain. I'd love to see, because as a casual player, I probably wouldn't get the super cool stuff, but I'd love to see people walking around with like this super cool sword that only they have.
Well, what I think would be cool, and so this is what I really wish could happen with MMOs, but I think is the biggest problem, is I think it'd be really cool. Well, because what I personally would do is incorporate a lot of like a guild in on it. So it's like, well, you can take X weapon, and if you put it on display in your guild hall, you now get a bonus. Everyone in the guild gets a bonus.
That way
it's not player driven. It's because that's personally more how I like to think of MMOs, and where I think certain games, like I think the Elder Scrolls Online and Destiny, which I mean, I'm not the biggest. I don't know if I've said this before, but I'm not the biggest fan of console MMOs. I think they leave a lot to be desired, and while it's still really new, I feel like they don't take lessons that have been learned from their older cousins, and to me that's slightly annoying, but that's besides the point. But I mean, so I kind of think MMO should be way more community focused, and so that's personally what I would do, is I would more push for, you have guilds, you have, you know, your groups, and that's like, so if one person gets a super rare weapon, well, cool, they got the super rare weapon, but that's not the cool part. The cool part is now the guild has it, so now the guild is super well known for being...
for being the guild with the super cool weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, again, I love the idea. I think it would take tweaking.
It would.
I think in order to get it to actually work in an MMO, because it's a great idea, but again, people would complain.
Well,
so if you tweak that just a little bit, you know, mess around with it. I can't really think of anything right now, but like, again, just like spend a day thinking about it. I guarantee you something could be come up with. Also, one, World of Warcraft should get guild halls. Just like, that's just a thing that should exist.
Well, okay, here's what I personally would love. I would love it if they made an MMO in which, see, what I personally would love is if NPCs so instead of having NPC, like you could have a shop completely run by a player, which... Here's where I think that this is a bad idea, but where I think that in today's world it could work. You know, I think it'd be bad because you need to be on your computer at all times. But where I think it would work in today's world is you can you know make an app for it. And I think it'd be really interesting to say, well, you run a shop, but you don't physically need to be there. You can just, you know, be on your phone, and you can say, and so what you can do is you can have it so that, well, if you're not available, all it will do is it'll give someone, like, this is the price for an item, and they can buy it. And if they want to haggle, you know, maybe you could put something in there after some tweaking.
Well, yeah, the programming on that, though, would be insane.
But the thing is if it would create an immersive experience that would be, like, interesting, then you'd retain player base, you'd get more. And, like, that's the thing.
It would be an interesting thing to put in there, but the programming would be crazy. And I don't know how many people would like that. I know... not necessarily to be a shopkeep, but like to be a quest giver or something like that. I know a lot of people have talked about wanting to do that, to where like they could just be like, instead of me going and doing this thing, I could just be like, hey, adventurer, I'll give you 20,000 gold. Go give me this dragon's head.
Here's how I see it. I would see it as, and this goes back to, you know, nonviolent play. So where you could be a merchant and that's all you do. You're in high, like you only play to buy goods cheaply and then sell them at a higher price. Well, and here's what this does. So this creates it so that you have a caravan. You need an adventurer to guard it, and then they get paid. So like that, like I would do it more by creating the jobs that you know, so someone can make a job that would then create an opportunity for a quest.
Well, again, good idea, but it would just require tweaking, because at that point, you know, a big complaint that WoW has had in the past with its daily system and stuff like that is it feels like a job. And if you're literally creating a job in the game, that could cause, you know, it could cause some issues, well, I would say.
But do you use the auction house a lot?
Not really, no. Sometimes.
But would you say that there is a subset of players that love using the auction house and, like, that's what they live for on WoW? Would you say there's...
I would say, yeah, they use it a lot, but not necessarily what they live for. They still want to experience a bunch of other things, but they do, you know, people use the auction house a lot.
Well, but would you say there is a subset, like, where, you know, that will... I'm more speaking in, like, a monetary sense. So, like, that's how they try and get rich quick, is off the auction.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, that's more what I'm trying to focus on, is, like, that's the subset of players who you advertise to and who you try and play to their advantages, which I wouldn't make it like a you can't do anything else. I mean, if you can have a computer and then, like, your phone, you could... you could hire like a delegate NPC, which just, instead of sending stuff to you, it just goes to your phone or your device. And so that way you could hypothetically adventure and do it at the same time. It would just be a tiny bit more of a hassle. Well, it would be more of a hassle.
Yeah. I mean, again, that just, there's so much that goes in that would require that I don't see something like that ever actually being implemented.
Well, the problem is that it requires a large player base, because if you don't have merchants, then you don't have the need for doing that. And that's where like the core problem is. But if you could pull it off, I mean, you would have a successful MMO.
Possibly.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no guarantee.
I would be a hardcore player with that.
Yeah, but you're an anomaly. Most people just want to go kill sheep.
I want to make riches by selling swords that you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, see, I'm not about that. I'm about going out and adventuring and loving the story and stuff like that. I don't even care about the money. Like, I don't. I care about, like, going out and, like, finding mounts and stuff like that. Like, the other day, I ran a dungeon, and a super rare mount, the blue proto-drake, dropped. And I was like, cool, I have this now. This is awesome.
Well, see, I'm way more about, like, I would build a just conglomerate of merchants and, like, a merchant's guild. So that way I could just run business throughout continents. Like, that's kind of what I would want in my MMO experience if I could have it.
Yeah.
Which is, that's why I really liked Fallen London, until it's like, you don't have any more actions. And then it's like, because that was the thing was, you know, so if you take the charismatic approach, I think like the entire point of it was you're trying to like rise up in society. You start out of like breaking out of prison.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to me that was interesting. But when it gets to the point where it's like, it's not fun because I can't play. And because if it is trying to use a Skinner box, it is doing a poor, poor job at it.
Yeah.
That was, sorry, that was a very, very long rant on my opinion of MMOs.
Yeah, and just that your opinion of MMOs is weird. I have never heard that before. Again, your idea is solid. I just can never see that being implemented in an MMO.
Well, okay, here's the type of people so basically city builders. People who like city builders would really like that.
Yeah, but then why wouldn't they just go play a city building game instead of, you know, paying possibly, if it's a monthly subscription MMO like WoW, possibly paying a monthly subscription or doing stuff like that. Like, why wouldn't they just go play a city building game then?
Because I'm pretty sure that there's... So, like the people in Sims, you know, they'll make Sims just to mess with them and catch them on fire. I am pretty sure that there is somebody who makes a city building game and then just like raises the taxes and makes a terrible city. So I'm pretty sure that they would love to just come to an MMO and then monopolize in it. Let's say like a mining industry. So they monopolize the mining industry.
Yeah, but if you monopolize it, then you'd probably be kicked out or banned by the developers. You can't have a monopoly and an MMO, or else you're just being a jerk.
Laissez-faire MMO governments are the only types of governments.
I was going to say, hold on, though. Maybe we should do this, because that means we can play video games in our government and econ classes.
I second that, but I don't know. Yes, I am an anomaly, but that's just, I don't know. I really like the tycoon types of games where, you know, you start really small and then eventually you build up to a large...
Exactly. No, I love tycoon games too, but I don't see them making MMOs tycoons as well. I don't see implementing a tycoon system.
Well, see, the only difference, well, you could argue that that's what SimCity 2013 was trying to be, but what I'd like...
Trying to be.
Well, okay. The fact that that game, you couldn't play it offline, was, it's like saying here, you have a baseball hat, you can't wear it forwards. That was exactly what... Okay, but what I think... Is the only difference between me wanting to make a business conglomerate in an MMO and you wanting to get and you're casual, but so like a hardcore player.
Again, I used to be hardcore.
Yeah, but you like wanting to get the best gear. I feel like the only difference is your means to getting to end game. Because it's still you're building and you're getting bigger and bigger and bigger until you're some, you know, strong legend through the story of WoW, or if you're playing like a game like City Skylines, where you have a mega op, I think it's they call it a megaopolis, where you just have tens or hundreds of thousands of people living in it, or you can, you know, you control the largest trading routes in the game.
Yeah, well, and then another issue that you come in with that is, at least I know for WoW, there are actually like there are NPCs and stuff that you fight against that are like, we're the big trade guys. Like in World of Warcraft, they're called the Venture Company. And they're basically just these big trade industry people that are the bad guys. And if the player base was those, then you wouldn't have the quests to go, you know, fight them.
Oh, wait. So I'm the type of person because one thing is for me, I really like how Oblivion did a quest log. But that was because it had its own writing and it was interesting. It was like journal entries. It wasn't go here, do this. It was like, this is weird. And so I would like to completely redesign the way like a quest log is given, because I think it's just not interesting as it stands now. And it's like, what I would do is I'd make it so it's like a bounty board. And so what you can do is you know, if I ran a merchant company, I could say, well, I need guilds to do this. So I'm just going to go to this guild and hire people. But they can say yes, they can say no, and all they have to do, which I would personally, I don't know how I'd make it so that it's like, oh, they have to be there. I mean, again, if I'm going to program a system with using cellular and mobile devices, might as well just make it so that what I can do is say, oh, well, hey, you can just hit a button on your phone and now you're doing it. And, you know, take like what your most used combos are and do that. I mean, that's been done before, I know, with like certain other games, mostly racing games, but it can be, hey, it can be done. But so that's why, like, I think it could work. I think it would really, what you first need is a large player base. And then that's when you fill in the niches.
Well, you also need a player base that is consistently active at basically all times.
Yeah, that's why I prefaced it with saying, you know, I really wish this could work, but I know it can't.
Yeah.
Because
anyway, we should probably, you know, it's about time for another one of our packages.
Oh, yeah.
So the next one is, you know, it's composers, it's music. It's with the game Banjo-Kazooie and Arkham Knight. So enjoy.
The following contains spoilers from the video games Arkham Knight and Banjo-Kazooie. Listen at your own risk.
Think of your favorite video game. Think of the feelings you had playing through that game. Think of all the emotions flooding through you as you reach that final boss door and the whole world is counting on you. Now, think of that moment without any music to accompany it. Not as cool, right? People may not realize this, but composers play a huge role in the production of video games. Developing the world you explore through sound is a crazy task that not everyone can accomplish. These, however, are the people that do it, and do it great. This is Composing the Game. Today, I'll be focusing on Nick Arundel from Arkham Knight and Grant Kirkhope from Banjo-Kazooie. Nick Arundel is the audio director for Rocksteady Studios, which is a British video game developer, and he is also a brilliant composer. Arundel is the composer for all of the Batman Arkham games, and the music he has produced is fantastic. Arkham Knight is no exception to that. Arkham Knight is the final game in the Arkham series. The game sees protagonist Batman fighting against Scarecrow and the Arkham Knight in a battle for the very soul of Gotham City. The story shows Batman's descent into a form of guilt-stricken madness after the death of his previous rival, the Joker. Batman blames himself for the Joker's death and just can't seem to shake it off. The game seems to be the darkest of the four, and the music shows that. Even in the opening score, you can tell that this is the end of the Batman. The score is dark and gritty, and gives a real sense of urgency to stop Scarecrow and all of his nasty allies. The piece titled Nature Always Wins will have you wanting to just stare over Gotham with your cape blowing in the wind as you try to decide what your next move will be. Arkham Knight is also the first Arkham game that puts you inside the Batmobile. It's a cool new mechanic to the game. The Batmobile is a slick new ride, and for a slick new ride, you'll need some hot music to go with it, and Arundel does not disappoint with what he delivers. Arundel keeps the player engaged and interested in the story throughout the entire game with his beautiful score. This composition brings out the true darkness that is the Batman story, all the way to the very end. Not every score in gaming is dark, however. Grant Kirkhope shows us that with this lovely tune of Mumbo's Mountain from Banjo-Kazooie. Banjo-Kazooie was a platform video game originally released on the Nintendo 64 game console. The game follows the two heroes, Banjo, who is a brown honey bear, and Kazooie, who is a red bird and is always kept in Banjo's backpack. The story follows these two as they venture through Gruntilda's lair to save Banjo's sister, Tootie, from the evil clutches of the witch, Gruntilda. Banjo and Kazooie must travel through a series of themed levels to get the chance to face off against Gruntilda, and the music in the game reflects these levels. Kirkhope gives us a silly Egyptian-themed score for the desert level Gobi's Valley. Kirkhope then delivers us a more mechanic sound with Clanker's Cavern. Each one of Kirkhope's scores is silly and fun, and really puts the player in the ridiculous world that is Banjo-Kazooie. Even the dark lair of the witch Gruntilda is filled with some fun, jazzy music. And for all tropical theme lovers, there's some of that too from Kirkhope. Kirkhope is a wonderful composer who did an amazing job with Banjo-Kazooie. So good, in fact, that I actually used one of his songs from the game Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts as the intro for this episode. Both Arundel and Kirkhope are fabulous, and I can't wait to hear more from them. For WHJE, this has been Michael Davis.
And we are back.
So we're going to change topics because we've been talking about MMOs for far too long.
To be fair, I could talk about MMOs all day.
Well, to be fair, I could also talk about my idea all day and how I would flush it out and make it into a hypothetical, which I know is all game ideas are, hypothetical perfect game that would be amazing. But
perfect game for you.
Oh, no, because it would, you'd be able to adventure in it.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be the perfect game for me. The perfect game for me already exists. It's called World of Warcraft.
I mean, I think the Elder Scrolls Online could do it, to be honest. I think they'd have
well,
to change.
Well, they can go ahead and do that, because I won't play it. I'm going to continue to play WoW.
I will pitch my idea for them as long as I get specific in-game benefits.
Really? I would want to... Why not just, like, real-life benefits? Because you have no idea. I want to work for Blizzard so much.
Mostly because well, I think I'd do it differently with Bethesda, but if it was, like, EA or, like, Ubisoft, well, and you know, one of the, like, big... I've been using this word too much today. Conglomerates of game companies.
I feel like you learned that word today, and we're like, it's a big word, and now I'll sound smart.
No, I don't know. Well, the big, I guess, the multinational corporations like EA, Ubisoft. I'm trying to think of another one. Those are the two that come to mind. But you know, the ones where it's like, well, you have EA, EA Australia, EA Europe, and you know, you have Ubisoft, Ubisoft Montreal, Ubisoft Australia,
Ubisoft
again.
All over the world.
Yeah, so. Oh, I was going to say Activision. Activision's a publisher. They're not really a thing.
Well, Activision Blizzard.
Yeah, and EA is really weird because they publish and they kind of develop. But that's besides the point. What I think, you dropped something there.
I almost dropped it. I caught it.
But the thing about those companies, I just forgot what I was saying. What were we talking about?
You were talking about conglomerates, as you were saying. About EA and Ubisoft and all that stuff, well, and working for them.
No, not working for them. Well, I did want to go into game design, and then I was like, yeah, I'd rather do cybersecurity.
Well, my thing is, I want to go into story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd love to go into story or editing sound design, really just anything.
I remember what I was going to say is
programming.
Is if you go to like EA or Ubisoft, what they're really going to do is they're going to take your idea, and unless you patent it or, like, get something, that's the only leverage you have. With Bethesda, they'd probably be like, all right, we'll give you some real-life benefits, but...
Well, that's why I was saying I want to work for Blizzard.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because I know a lot about that company. I've studied it for over 8 years of my life now, and so I know a lot about them. I love their company design. Activision Blizzard was actually like it's one of the best companies to work for, Fortune 100 company.
I think
something like that.
See, I don't, and I'd have to look this up, which we might actually do right now. But I think Activision published Destiny.
Yes,
they did. Okay, yeah. So yeah, that's what
their Destiny. I was about to say Barnes and Noble. No, Call of Duty.
We made a game where you sell books. Hey, that's my type of game.
Exactly. Yeah. No, Barnes and Noble the game. Evan, you would love it.
I'd buy it.
But yeah, no, not so. Call of Duty, Skylanders. That's all the Activision side of things.
Okay,
and then, of course,
thing.
Blizzard, World of Warcraft.
So
Minecraft,
Destiny.
Diablo.
Destiny is a. It's an anomaly of a game in and of itself. Now, I'm not going to go into why I think, oh, they need to add the merchants of Destiny. I think that'd be cool. I don't think that would work mostly. I think basically...
It just wouldn't work in anything.
You could make
your
it work.
Your dream is dumb. I'm saying it now.
Watch me pitch it to Blizzard just like 20 years down the line when technology is good. No, it's going to be done by the people who make EVE Online.
Yeah.
Because that just sounds like something they'd do.
Yep.
Yeah, and the community would be into it.
Is it just you? I think you're just the community.
If I would be the only... Okay, you know what? I'm down for that. Anyways, but if you know, if I pitch my idea 20 years down the road and they take it, I'm just going to be... I'm going to make sure there's some Easter egg that is just like saying... That just says basically just blatantly, Michael Davis said I was wrong. He was wrong.
I would stop playing all Blizzard games at that point. Like, I love Blizzard. My favorite company. I would stop. I would sell all of my stuff and be like, I'm done. I'm done with video games.
But so what I don't like about Destiny was a game that the people that played it the most were also the people that hated it the most. And
seems kind of dumb.
Well, see, I was a part of that group.
Once again, well, seems kind of dumb.
Ooh, low blow. Anyways, but what... But the real thing was, I mean, Destiny was, I didn't like its DLC, I don't like its DLC system, especially for the fact that Blizzard releases, I mean, you could say
you
DLC.
Destiny's DLC because Blizzard.
No, because, hold on a second. Here's why. Because Blizzard is known for releasing expansion yearly.
Yeah.
So they tried to emulate this in Destiny, except for it is just DLC, and it did terrible things. So for starters, Activision and like Activision purposely made the writers of Destiny rewrite the story because they wanted to make more DLC. I'm not lying. Now on console is a lot tinfoil hat. Well, from what I've seen of the difference in console and PC, I have seen some PC tinfoil hat, but not to the degree that I've seen console. But like this was, you know, when they would take the game disc and open up the installer, they found files for stuff that you can't access. And that was originally programmed to be accessible from day one. I think you might be able to access it now. But the thing is with a company, well, with Activision Blizzard, with a company like Blizzard and their expansion, like, I would kind of expected them to be really good at, oh, releasing expansions, not just, like, small DLC packs.
Yeah.
And so that to me, that was kind of infuriating.
Yeah.
Another thing that was infuriating was just, so I know we talked about this before, was a really big thing in RPGs on consoles is farming. Like, a lot of people would rather farm than do story because it's just how console
because
players
because they're
work.
Dumb and they don't get that story is great.
Well, I mean, let's just put it this way. Once you're done with the story, main story in Destiny, I mean, there's literally nothing else.
Yeah, I have
so,
heard that.
So you can only farm, but
it's
they
why
got,
all Destiny players should just go play WoW.
I mean, you gotta understand. Okay, I know they're releasing a bunch of DLC in short intervals, but like monthly payments just not in the cards for people who, for a lot of console players.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say, you can do what I do.
Guild Wars 2 would be good for console players, but not WoW.
Yeah.
Well, because Guild Wars 2 is, it's free to play now.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say, you can do what I do, and that's, I don't actually do the monthly fee. I regularly buy 60-day time cards, which I think it costs the same amount of money. It's just you can stop whenever. I mean, I guess you can with monthly, too, but it's just it feels different. And you can also get, like, the 60-day time cards for, like, a birthday or something like that. So I've never actually once paid the monthly fee, which I don't know. I'm sure that's fine.
You know, I think, hopefully. You know, I just think all console players should move over to Club Penguin.
Oh, dude. Club Penguin's a great game. Did you ever play the card game?
The Card Ninja game?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I don't remember anything about it, but I know I played it.
That was my sole reason for doing Club Penguin, is to play that.
Yeah, but, okay, Club Penguin is a very, I don't even know what it is. It's not pay to win, but it's basically like,
well, I haven't been on it in forever. Is it even still around?
Yes. Okay, we're actually going to do this as we speak. You're going to, like, clubpenguin.com. As we were speaking, so I'm pretty sure it is still around.
You're the worst at typing.
Well, that's because I'm using one hand because I have to keep.
Penguin is Disney.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Well, it's Disney's number one virtual world for kids.
I was gonna say
it
is. What does Disney not own?
It is still. If you want to get really specific, I think there are only like five. There's only like five companies that own every single TV station. And there's only five actual networks. Yeah, Club Penguin is still around. They also have an official Twitter, which, one day ago apparently was the anniversary, which would be Monday for the people who are listening on the website and or at a later time.
Yeah,
it was on Monday, October 26th was the anniversary of Club Penguin. But I mean, yeah, Club Penguin was just really interesting because it was just all about, I don't even know.
It was just about being a penguin.
I mean, but.
And so playing ninja cards.
I really enjoyed, like, the spy aspect of it.
I don't remember that. I just played simply for the cards.
The things I really liked were the newspapers, which I really am kind of sad, because they have, like, I'm just going to assume by now they have, like, at least 1,000 different editions, but you can only go back, like, 5. And I mean, it's just a text file or a picture file or some sort of file. I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be too hard to make a full archive. That and like just the spy stuff has changed. I really enjoyed it. Like, I thought it was really fun.
Yeah. No, at least
like 8-year-old me thought it was fun.
Oh, I don't know how I'd feel playing it now. Or the card game, definitely, because, you know, now I play Hearthstone. So I'm honestly tempted to go back to Club Penguin just to do the cards, see how much fun I have.
I would love to see console players or just the entire League of Legends community
just
go
play Club Penguin.
Okay.
That'd be a great for YouTube listeners. If you have a channel, you should do that. I guarantee you people would watch it.
A Club Penguin walkthrough.
Exactly.
Of how to get literally everything. That game was just...
Actually, it looks like we're starting to run out of time, so we should probably go to the next... The final package.
Final package. So this is something I'm doing, and so this is more aimed at, since I'm going to assume that mostly teenagers and or, you know, people who are younger and under the age of 21 and who have parents, this is basically aimed at your parents, and this is more for you know, your aunts and uncles who's your cousins who like might not game. Okay, I'm gonna read.
We get it.
Yes, this is just about like what you need to do to get into gaming. And like this is, so I'm gonna do more of these, but the first one's just like the bare basics and cost wise. So we'll be right back here on eHounds, your one stop shop for everything gaming related, here on 91.3 WHJE The Edge.
The voice.
With the holiday season soon approaching, many parents this year are going to make the decision of whether or not to get their kids into gaming. And like most things in life, it's easier said than done. The first thing that most parents ask is, what does my kid want? The simple answer is that you should get them what most of their friends play. This way, they will always have someone to play with. Now the next biggest question is, how much will this all cost? The biggest factors at work here are what hardware you already own, such as TVs or cables. If you have to start from scratch, then you will need to drop between $300 to $350 for new last generation hardware, and around $450 to $500 for the current console generation. And keep in mind that these are for very basic setups. Prices can vary depending on if you decide to bundle or if you get a pre-owned console. Now you may be wondering what a console generation is and how it will affect you. A console generation is the span of time between two separate console releases from one company, such as the Xbox 360 to the Xbox One. This equates to about 7 to 10 years. Most consoles last longer than a console generation, but there will be a decline in games for an old console once a new one is released. Another good reason to choose consoles is that they are becoming more than just a gaming machine, and many have started to become the center of the living room. If you don't want to get a console, another option is to game on PC. If you decide to game on PC, then the biggest thing you will have to worry about is your internet connection, as PC gaming is moving towards digital buying more and more. Some hard copies of games now only come with a download code instead of a CD. PC is most often seen as being more budget-friendly, but there are certain games, such as Assassin's Creed Unity, that require parts that are very expensive, so it can limit some of your game selection. Luckily, many digital distributors have started to support refunds for games, so if you get a game that your system can't run, then you won't have to worry. PCs vary in price to an extreme degree, and can go from a few hundred to tens of thousands of dollars. And with how quickly technology is advancing, you never know when today's best of the best can become tomorrow's standard. So you will need to look into what you are looking for. I would recommend building your own. It can take some time, but there are plenty of resources online that will be helpful. A big benefit of building your own machine is that when it comes time to upgrade, you will have the option to replace parts instead of replacing the whole machine. Some pre-made PCs allow you to open the case, but it can be a hassle if you need to upgrade size. But whatever you choose, the important thing is to have fun.
All right, so before we go, we just wanted to finish up what we were talking about with Club Penguin. But no, I just think it'd be hilarious to see either just, you know, Xbox players, PlayStation players. I was about to say PSPs, which that's a thing that doesn't exist anymore, to my knowledge. Or just like the League of Legends community, and see what would happen when all that toxicity would just move to Disney's Club Penguin.
It would be hilarious. It would be a bunch of like 8th graders, 7th graders who are just in their happy little land all of a sudden just destroyed by these monstrous MOBA players that just are dark and evil, because that industry, while fun to watch and is super cool for the kids that get to participate in it, it's a disastrous industry with greedy people.
I think every single MOBA, this goes from like titles from Awesome Knots to League of Legends, just has toxic. It's the MOBA. I don't know why. MOBA players, I think, are just really toxic.
Well, a lot of times it's not even the players, it's the industry itself. It's a lot of the big businesses that get behind it. I know a lot of like team owners, team managers and stuff like that. They are just bad people. A lot of them are. If you've ever listened to Jesse Cox's The Salt, he goes really in depth with it. But yeah, so it's not, sometimes it's the players, yeah. Sometimes they can be cocky, but a lot of times the players that are cocky deserve it. Like they're usually good. The cocky ones are usually good. But yeah, a lot of it's managers, stuff like that. So yeah.
All right, well, we'll have to talk about this. We'll have to talk about this in about 2 weeks. So, with that, this will conclude this week's edition of eHounds, your one-stop shop for everything gaming-related. with me, Evan Onimus, and
me, Michael Davis.
That will be the duo signing out.